We are going to start the second book of the Torah this week, Sefer Shmos. And each of the books of the Torah have two names. The name that you're most familiar with, it's taken from the first few words of the book, Bereishis Shmos, Vayikra, Vamidbar, and Dvarim. But the rabbis also gave the books thematic names, names according to the themes of the Sefer. Bereishis is called Sefer HaYetzira, the book of creation. Shmos is called Sefer HaGeula, the book of redemption. Vayikra is called Toras Kohanim, the laws, the Torah of the Kohanim. Bamidbar is called Chumash HaPikudim, it's the Chumash of the countings, because it starts with the census when they went into the desert and the census when they came out of the desert. Starts with a counting and ends with a counting. And the fifth book, Devarim, is called Mishneh Torah, the review of the Torah. Now you may think that you have just heard that those names for the first time, but you know them very well, but you don't know it. Because the Greek names for these Svarim are the Greek translation of what the rabbis call the books. Genesis means creation, the book of creation. Exodus is the book of redemption, Exodus from Egypt. Leviticus means the laws of the Levium, of the Kohanim, Toras Kohanim. Numbers, you ever wonder why Bamidbar is called Numbers? Because that's Chumash HaPikudim, that's the Chumash of the numberings, of the census. And Deuteronomy in Greek means the review of the law, which is Mishneh Torah. So you knew that even before I told you it, but you didn't know that. Okay. In any case, all of the names are parallel. The name of the book, Bereishis, Sefer Yetzirah, they fit very nicely. Bereishis in the beginning, the book of creation, very nice connection. Vayikra, God called to Moshe from the Mishkan to tell him the laws of the Kohanim. Fit very nicely together, Vayikra and Toras Kohanim. Bamidbar, I skipped one. Bamidbar, right, in the desert. The desert was between the first counting, the second counting, so it's the book of countings in the desert. And Devarim, these are the words that Moshe spoke, the words of reviewing of the Torah. Perfect match, except for one, Shmos. Shmos means names, and it's called the book of redemption. What in the world does names have to do with the book of redemption? That's what we're going to speak about today. The connection between the thematic name of this Sefer, the Book of Redemption, and the simple name, the Elah Shmos B'nai Yisrael. Is there a connection between them? In order to understand this, I want to go back to last week's Sedra. Last week's Sedra, and that's good because I wasn't here last week, so... In last week's Sedra, Yaakov Avinu calls his children together, and the Torah says that his purpose in calling them together, I want to tell you what is going to be in the end of days. And Chazal say, Bikesh Legalos es Haketz. He wanted to let them know the deadline when Mashiach was going to come. And for some reason, he was prevented from doing that, and instead, he blessed them. So first of all, if I had come here today prepared to teach you this subject and I lost this paper or I got amnesia, I wouldn't just sit down and start telling you something else. I'd say, look, give me time to prepare something else. I'll come back a different time. Yaakov Avinu prepared a shiur on when Mashiach's coming. He forgot it. All of a sudden he starts saying brachas, unprepared. What's the connection? Secondly, the Torah describes these as brachos. This is what the Father spoke to them and blessed each one. Did they really get a blessing, each one? Let's see from the beginning. Reuven, you could have been the king, the firstborn, and the Kohen. Lost them all. Great brach. I would stay home for that brach. Shimon and Levi, cursed be your anger. Not too much of a bracha. So out of 12, the first three, which is one quarter, didn't get a bracha. And the other ones, some of them, Yaakov said, well, you're like a snake, you're like a donkey, you're like a lion. Yeah, it's very nice for the zoo, but what does that do with brachas? So what does that mean? He gave them all brachas. Where are the brachas here? Now there's a medrash. We're going to heap up a few questions here, and Mirz Hashem, I hope, will answer them. The medrash says like this. When Yaakov Avinu called his children in, he looked at their names. And he saw that in none of the names of the tribes appear the letters Ches and Tes. None of them have a Ches or a Tes in their names. Ches and Tes is Chet, sin. He said, wow, my children are free of sin in their names. So if that's the case, I'm going to tell them when Mashiach's going to come. I'm going to tell them the Kates, the end, the deadline. He looks in their names again. He sees there's two other letters that don't appear in any of their names. Kuf and Tzadik, Kates. He said, well, there's no Chet, but there's no Kates either. Can't tell them when the Mashiach's going to come. What does that mean? Kates means the end, the deadline. The end of days. Kates Hayomim. So, can't tell them the end. So what does that mean? I understand that maybe sin isn't hinted to in the names of the tribes. They're perfect, sinless people. But there's no hint to Mashiach in their names? Why not? Another medrash. The medrash says, what can Yaakov be compared to? To a confidant of a king who's dying. Okay, the king's friend is dying, he calls his children in, and he wants to reveal to them the mysteries that the king confided in him. And just as he's ready to tell over these mysteries, the secrets of the king, he sees the king standing there by his bed together with his children. So he, instead of telling them the mysteries of the king in front of the king, he says, be very careful of the honor of the king. So too, Yaakov Avinu wanted to tell over the secrets of God, when Mashiach's going to come, and he sees that God standing by his bed together with his children. So instead of telling them the secrets, he says, gives them blessings. Now what bothered me about this is, why didn't the rabbis make the mashal fit the nimshal? Why doesn't the parable fit what it's describing? In other words, the rabbis could have made up the parable any way they wanted. What they should have said is the following. The king's friend wants to tell his children the secrets of the king. That is parallel to Yaakov wanting to tell his children when Mashiach's going to come. The secrets of the king. He sees the king standing there by his bed with his children. Yaakov sees the Shechinah by his bed. So instead of telling them the secrets, he blesses them. That would have been describing what happened. That would have been a good parable. Why did the rabbis introduce a new thing that had nothing to do with the story? He told them, be careful of the honor of the king. Yaakov didn't tell that to his children, he blessed them. Where's this idea of being careful of the honor of the king? How does that fit in? Why is that part of the parable? In this week's Sedra, the Torah says that the Jewish people are precious as the stars, about which it says, Monen Nispar Lakochavim, God counts every star, and he calls them by name. Lekulam B'Shemos Yikra. So too, God counts the Jewish people over and over, and each one he calls by name. We are precious, just like the stars, all of us have a name, and God calls us by our name. Now what does that mean? Now, a few times I was back in the States this time of year. This time I didn't hear it. But the last time I was there about 2-3 years ago, and then about 10 years ago, and about 15 years ago, I heard on the radio the following advertisement. In case you have a friend who has everything, so you're having trouble deciding what to buy that person as a present, right, Goyish gift-giving time, we have the following proposition. It started about 20 years ago with $25, then I heard for $50, and recently $75, so they must be making money on this. Send in $25 to this address, and we will name a star for the person that you want to give the gift. We will send him a certificate certifying that this and this star is named for him, and we will register it in the star registry. Now, let me tell you a secret. You can go out tonight, take a blank piece of paper, and write in beautiful calligraphy, star registry, on the top of the paper. Then go outside and name every star in the sky for yourself and your family. And then write down on that piece of paper, on your star registry, these are the names of the stars. That's exactly as official as it is in what they're sending you. They also have a star registry. Right? It has no official anything. And they'll register it in their star registry and send you a certificate that they registered in their star registry for $25 when you could do it for free. Is that what it means? Every Jew is precious like the stars. God gives a name to every star. Big deal. What does it mean? Another medrash, and then we'll start giving some answers. The medrash says in the schus, in the merit of the names of Bnei Yisrael, b'schus ve'ela shmos Bnei Yisrael, miskaimim ve'ela toldo shemayim v'aretz. The world exists in the merit of the names of the Jewish people. Now what does that mean? So let me tell you what I think it means. In Lashon HaKodesh, a name represents the essence of the thing that it's a descriptive name. It's much more than that. It's not just that the name describes what the thing is or what the person is or whatever. Somehow in that name, in the letters of the name, in the numerical value, in the way the letters look, it represents the essence of that thing. Okay? And it doesn't only mean the name that you're given, that you're called. It means the name of something is a description of its essence, its abilities, capabilities, and talents. That's what a name is. The rabbis say that, the Torah says, Adam HaRishon named everything in creation. He didn't just arbitrarily pick names. The name represents a thing. For instance, a kelev. One of the reasons a kelev is called a kelev, right, a dog, because it has the word lev in it, heart. And a dog is a very faithful pet. It has one heart to its master. That's not the only thing, but it's one nuance of how the name fits the thing itself and describes its qualities, abilities, capabilities, talents, and so on. Its essence. In that respect, there's a medrash that says that every person has four names. The name God gives you, the name your parents give you, the name your friends give you, and the main name is the name you give yourself. Let me explain what I think that means based on what I just told you about names. Every human being, every Jew especially, has talents, abilities, capabilities. Where do they come from? Some of them come directly from God, meaning when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created your neshama, he tailor-made it to fit the mission that he intended for that neshama. Every neshama has a different mission here. So God outfitted the neshama with the qualities that would fit its mission. That's the name that God gave you. There are certain qualities that don't come with the creation of your neshama, but they come to you through heredity. Those are the name your parents give you. Some qualities you learn from others or influenced by your environment. That's the name your friends give you. Those are the qualities, abilities, capabilities that you get from others. All of those things are potential. Potential is like a big zero. You have a lot of potential, you have a lot of zeros. A lot of zeros is nothing more than zero. If you put a number before those zeros, then the zeros become a very big number. If you don't put anything before it, it remains zero. So the main thing is not the potential, God's name, your parents' name, your friend's name. The main thing is, what do you do in developing that potential? What do you make the name for yourself? And that is the main name that you have. What do you do with the potential? How do you develop your own name? It says by Bezalel. Bezalel was a very talented young man. He was an architect, a builder, a jeweler, an artist, a Kabbalist, a big Talmud Chacham. He was very talented physically, spiritually. So the Torah says that Moshe, God says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Re'e karasi b'shem Bezalel. Look, I've called the name of Bezalel. And Moshe is supposed to tell over the Jewish people, look, God has called the name of Bezalel. The Sfarno says whenever it says look, and it doesn't mean with your physical eyes, it means to contemplate, think. Think deeply. I called the name of Bezalel. Now how deeply could you think into that? About a second. Okay, God called the name Bezalel. What's more to know? What I think it means is the following. There are two tremendous lessons to think about in the fact that God called the name of Bezalel. The way we're explaining it, the name represents the talents, abilities, capabilities. God says, I want you to contemplate. This young man is a very talented young man. Where did he get those talents? Went to college? Took a mail order course? No. He was given those talents by me, because he was a slave in Egypt his whole life. So he couldn't acquire them for himself. So obviously he was blessed with these talents, God-given talents. So the first thing is to realize that everybody's like that. Everybody has talents, abilities, capabilities that God blesses them with. Second lesson. Okay, why does God give you those talents, abilities, and capabilities? Why did Bezalel have these tremendous talents? So he could build shopping centers? He could build townhouses? Maybe. But it's obvious that the main reason why he had them is because somebody had to build the Mishkan, and God gave Bezalel the wherewithal to be that person. So if you have talents, abilities, and capabilities, they obviously were given to you mainly to use in service of God. Service of the Torah and service of Klal Yisrael. You want to use them for other things? Gesunter, hey. But that's the icing on the cake. The cake is to use them somehow in service of the Rabbanu Shel Olam, in service of Torah, in service of Klal Yisrael. So that's what we learn from Bezalel. Re'ei Karasi B'Shem. How important is it that a person develop his potential, develop his talents, abilities, and capabilities? There's a Gemara that says that before a person dies, his neshama gives a scream that's heard from one end of the world to the other. Misofa olam v'ad sofa. That is the terminology that the Medrash uses. The scream is heard to Gemara. Misofa olam v'ad sofa. From the end of the world to the end. Reb Chaim Volozhiner explains what is so traumatic that the neshama screams about right before it dies. Right before a person dies. He says, right before a person dies, HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows him a split screen. On one side, he sees what he could have been had he developed all his potential. On the other side, he sees what he actually was. And when he sees the difference between what he could have been and what he was, he gives a screen that goes, Misofa Olam V'Ad Sofa. Now, I want to add to that, because the terminology is a little difficult. It should have said, Merosh HaOlam V'Ad Sofa, from the beginning of the world to the end. That's where the scream goes. Why from the end to the end? Why Misofa Olam V'Ad Sofa? So I'm saying it means the following. Based on the following. There's a Gemara in Megillah. The Gemara says that, the Megillah says that Achashverosh ruled Mehodu V'Ad Kush. So in the Gemara there's an argument between Rav and Shmuel what exactly that means. One opinion says that Hodu and Kush were at opposite ends of the world, and he ruled from Hodu to Kush and everything in between. That's what the Megillah is telling me. The other opinion says no, Hodu and Kush were right next to each other, under Achashverosh's thumb, right next to each other. And he ruled over Hodu and Kush with the same iron hand that he ruled over the rest of the world. So there's an argument where Hodu and Kush were. They were right next to each other or at opposite ends of the world. The Vilna Gaon asked two questions. First of all, how can you argue where Hodu and Kush are? It's a fact. Go find out. Don't sit in the base medrash and argue, right? Argue Ezra's Torah and Romaim are next to each other, or they're opposite ends of the world. Go find out. Look at a map. And secondly, we know whenever the rabbis argue, they're both right. How could they both be right? Either it's right next to each other, opposite ends of the world. Says the Vilna Gaon, no problem. We live on a globe. This building and the building next door are right next to each other if you go that way. But if you go that way, you're not going to get to that building until you go around the whole world. So if you look this way, this building and that building are opposite ends of the world. If you look that way, they're right next to each other. The whole argument is only perspective. That's the Vilna Gaon. Okay, now let me take that and use it for my purposes. Take a little point, one little point, on anywhere on the globe. If you look at it as an end in itself, that's all it is, a little point. But if you divide it in two, and the top part is the beginning, and the bottom part is the end, and you go away from the point, that point is going to include the entire world. That little point becomes an entire world if you look at it as a beginning and end. That's why the neshama screams. Everybody has points of potential. If you look at them as ends in themselves, they remain a little point. If you look at them as a beginning and an end, they encompass an entire world. That's the neshama. Misofa olam v'ad sofa. It only looked at the points of potential as ends, and then they were nothing. If it had looked at them as beginning and ends, they would have each one been a world to themselves. That's the scream. And therefore, sometimes people reach their potential and their name in God's mind and their name down here become equal. That's what it says, Avram, Avram, right, by the Akedah. God called to Avram twice. And the Medrash of the Zohar says, Avram Lamala, Avram Lamata. The same Avram up there that God intended was the same Avram down here. He reached his potential. The same potential that God saw is the same realization of potential that he actually reached. With that, you can understand why, if you don't use your talents, abilities, capabilities, and potential out, that it's a serious thing. The Chedushei Harim says, I think we mentioned this way back, Aseres Yemei Teshuva, I'm going to say it again. The Chedushei Harim says that at Ne'ilan Yom Kippur, we only say one confession. Aside from the Asham, though, we don't say the long Al-Chayt. We say a few paragraphs, and in there there's one confession of one sin. L'man nechdal me'oshik yodeinu, in order that we should stop stealing. So he says, that's the one sin that every man, woman, and child has to confess. Ne'ilah of Yom Kippur, we're a bunch of thieves. Stop stealing this year. Maybe you didn't steal anything last year. He says what it means is the following. And I'd like to give the following example before I say what he says. It makes it more clear. And it's customary in the secular world that sports teams and various firms send scouts to the senior class in high school to scout out talented young people who could maybe pursue the career of this firm and come and work for the firm. So they approach a young lady and they say, you have great talent in an engineering firm. Send scouts to this senior class. And they find one young woman who has excelled in all of her tests in math, and she's very artistic. Put the two together, you got a great engineer. So they go to her and they say, look, we need young, talented people in our engineering firm. We're willing to payroll your college education. We'll send you to college, become an engineer. We'll pay your tuition, your room, board, give you spending money. Just one condition. When you finish and get your degree, you come and work for our firm for 5 years. Minimum. Great guaranteed job, fully paid tuition, why not? Signs on the dotted line. She goes to college, becomes an engineer, comes to work for the firm. And instead of doing anything constructive, the whole day she sits and doodles. That's it. That's what she does in the firm. What sin is this young woman guilty of?
Stealing.
Stealing. They invested in her a tremendous amount of money, and she's not giving them the return on their investment. She's a ganav. That's what the Chedushei Harim says. We were invested by God with a lot more than money. He gave us a body, a soul, qualities, abilities, capabilities, talents, material possessions, and he wants to see a return on his investment. He wants us to use them in service of him. We look back over the year, and we see that not only aren't we using these things in service of God much of the time, we're even using it for the competition. So we're a bunch of thieves. So we tell God, this year we're not going to steal anymore. We're going to start using what you invested in us for the purpose that you invested in. We're going to give you a return on your investment. If that's the case, you can understand the next Medrash. And now we're going to get close to answering the questions we started with. The Medrash says that the Geula, the redemption, is hinted to in the names of the tribes. Each name hints to a different aspect of redemption. What does that mean? What it means is that, what is redemption? Redemption is taking the potential perfection that exists and actualizing it, bringing out perfection. So the perfection of the world really depends on the perfection of the individual. When individuals will bring out their perfection, then the world will reach its perfection. So the redemption, the perfection of the world, depends on the names of the Shvatim, bringing out the perfection of the Jewish people. Now another ingredient. Mashiach can come in one of two ways. It can come be'ita, in its set time, or it can come achishena, quicker, earlier. There is a set time, a deadline, which God ordained when he created the world, that beyond that date Mashiach will not tarry. If we're not ready for Mashiach before that time, God will see to it that at that time we'll be ready. If it has to wait till the end, this is the deadline. This is it. Not going to come later than this. But it can come earlier than that. If we merit it, Mashiach can come any day. Come today. This minute. Right? So, Mashiach can come at the deadline, or it can come at any point earlier if we merit. The deadline is called the Kates. The final deadline. Yaakov Avinu wanted to reveal to his children the Kates, when the deadline for Mashiach was. He looks at their names, and he sees that there's no chet. Chet means sin, but it specifically means something else. It means deficiency. Chesaron. Something missing. Missing the mark. You shoot an arrow at the target and you miss the mark. That's called lahachti, to miss the mark. Chet means chesaron. It means something's missing or there's deficiency. You miss the mark. If there is no chet, that means there's perfection. There's the potential for perfection. Yaakov looks at the names of his children and he sees they have the potential for perfection. That means that if they will just develop their talents, abilities, and capabilities, develop their names, then they'll reach perfection and the world will reach perfection and Mashiach will come earlier. So there's no kates. The kates, the deadline, is not hinted to in the names of the Shvatim, because if they'll exercise their names, they won't have to wait till the kates. They'll never have to come to the deadline. Mashiach will come much sooner. So it's not that the Kates, Mashiach is not hinted to in the names of the Shvatim. The Kates, the deadline is not hinted to, because that is irrelevant to their names. If they'll just develop their names, they will never have to be a deadline. Mashiach will come much sooner. That's what it meant. And therefore, Yaakov Avinu, when the date of the deadline was taken away from him, right, obscured, he thought there was something wrong with his children. But it wasn't because of something wrong, something right. It's because if they would develop their potential, they wouldn't have to wait to the deadline. That's why. So Yaakov said, you know what? Instead of telling my children the deadline for Mashiach, I have something better to tell them. I'll tell them how they can bring Mashiach closer. And that's the marshal with the confidant of the king. We're going to learn it completely different than I presented it before, which is the way most people learn it. Listen now how it goes. The confidant of the king wants to reveal to his children the secrets that the king confided in him. He sees the king standing by his bed and he doesn't do that. Why not? So in the beginning we thought because he's embarrassed. He doesn't want to tell in front of the king the mysteries of the king to his children. But what kind of friend of the king is that? That he's willing to say behind the king's back things that he wouldn't say in front of the king? There's no friend. The different reason. He reasons to himself the following. He knows the king wouldn't mind if he tells his children these interesting things. It's not the reason that he doesn't tell his children. But he says to himself the following. I could tell my children the interesting things the king confided in me, and they'd hear it from me secondhand. But the king's standing right here by the bed together with my children. I'd rather tell my children something that they could hear these things directly from the king firsthand. How? Be careful of the honor of the king. He's right here amongst you. If you're careful with his honor, you'll be his friend. And he'll be your friend. And he'll tell you the same things he told me. So you'll hear it directly from him. Isn't that better than hearing it secondhand from me? So too Yaakov Avinu said, I could tell my children when the deadline for Mashiach is. But I have something better to tell them. I'll tell them how they can bring the deadline closer. So instead of telling them the deadline, the secrets of the king, I'll tell them how to get friendly with the king so they can bring it closer. And therefore he blessed them. Now what was the blessing? The biggest blessing you can give a person, your children, your students, your friends, is to let them know what potential they have. It says that Chavivim ha'adam shenivra b'tzelem Elokim. People are very precious because we were created in God's image. Chiba yisera nodas lahem shenivra b'tzelem Elokim. But there's an extra preciousness that we were told that were created in the image of God. Because you can have tremendous potential, but if you don't know it, then it's a waste. If you know what potential you have, that's extra special. So Yaakov Avinu said, I'm going to give my children the biggest blessing I can give them and tell them what their potential is and what it's not. That's also a blessing. It's a blessing not only to tell people what they can do, but tell them what they can't do. For instance, imagine a person with the most terrible singing voice you can imagine. When he sings, it sounds like scraping your nails on a chalkboard. Okay? It's horrendous. People run in terror when they hear the person singing. That's how bad it is. One day you see this person going to the library and taking out a stack of books on how to be a chazan. Wouldn't it be a bracha to go to that person and say, unless you plan to be a chazan in a institution for the deaf, right, it's not for you. Right? This is just not your talent. Be an author. Something, but not something to do with your voice. Right? You're wasting your time. It's a bracha to tell the person that. Don't waste your time on developing, on being a chazan, because it's not for you. Do something else. Don't waste your time. Reuven, you're not a melech, you're not a kohen, you're not a bechor. Don't focus on that. Focus on your talents, what you can do. This was could have been you, it wasn't. That's a bracha. Shimon and Levi, you have a problem with your anger. I'm going to help you work it out. That's a bracha. You have these talents, like a snake, like a donkey, like a... These are your qualities, your abilities, your capabilities. Work them out. That's the bracha. And with that bracha, they can bring Mashiach sooner. Because if you use your talents, abilities, and capabilities and bring out that potential, that's where the geula is. Geula means redeeming your potential. And when the individual reaches perfection, it helps the world reach perfection. That's why there's two brachas in Shemona Esrei. There's a bracha, Goel Yisrael, God is the Redeemer, Re'eino Vanyeno, way back in the beginning of Shemona Esrei. And then there's the bracha of Esamach David Avdecha and Yerushalayim Ircha, which deal with the Geula, the redemption of Mashiach, building of Yerushalayim, the Beis Hamikdash, Malchus Beis David. So Rashi says, well, what's the first one? Oh, back in the middle of Shemona Esrei, the beginning of Shemona Esrei, we're talking already about Geula. What Geula is that? He says that Geula is the ongoing redemption of each individual, day by day, from their calamities and sorrows. But basically redemption means to bring out your potential, to take that which is potential and actualize it. And God redeems us on an individual, ongoing basis. And ultimately, all those individual redemptions and actualization of potential leads to the perfection of the world. That's why there's another Medrash. The Medrash says that when Yaakov Avinu saw that it was obscured for him to say when Mashiach would come, he thought there was something wrong with his children. There was something invalid about them. So they sensed that he looked at them, you know, in a very accusing way, like something's wrong with you. So they proclaimed, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Listen, Yisrael, our father, our hearts are not divided, we all are unified under God, just like you are. And Yaakov Avinu answered, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Olam Vled. I want to explain what that means. One way, there are many ways. Yaakov Avinu thought that the reason he couldn't tell his children when Mashiach is going to come is because something was wrong with them. And then they proclaimed, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. That no, one day Mashiach is going to come and we're all united under Hashem. And that's when he saw that the reason he couldn't tell them when Mashiach's going to come is not because something wrong with them, because something right with them. Because he saw in their name there's no chait, there's no deficiency, and they can bring Mashiach earlier. So he responded, Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuso, shame, the name of God's kingdom is made up of the names of all the people in that kingdom. And that's La'olam Vo'ed, it could be any time. It could be forever. It could be today, tomorrow, the next day. There's no deadline. It could be earlier than the deadline. That's the idea. Memela, that is why the book of Shemos is the book of redemption. Because where is the redemption? In names. The redemption lies in the names, meaning the talents, abilities, capabilities of every individual. They can redeem themselves and bring their potential to actuality and redeem their potential, and in that way the world becomes redeemed. So the book of redemption, the book of names, perfectly fit. Exactly. I just want to end with a story that brings this out very nicely. It's not a chazal, it's not a medrash, just a story that I heard at graduation once from the valedictorian used this in his speech many years ago. The story goes like this. There's a man reading a magazine, and his little child is bothering him incessantly. Little five-year-old girl, and she doesn't let up, and he can't make headway in the magazine. So he sees that one page of the magazine is a map of the world. So he tears out the page, tears into 20 little pieces, calls over his little daughter and says, "Here's a map of the world. It's a puzzle. Go put it together and don't come back till you finish." Now he knows that the little five-year-old doesn't know what the picture of the world looks like. So the only way she can put the puzzle together is by matching the contours of the tears. It's going to take her hours. He said, "I have a few hours now, peace and quiet. Kid will be busy." 15 minutes later, the little girl comes back. "I finished the puzzles. The picture is reconstructed the way that it was when it was in the magazine." He said, "Impossible. There's no way you could have put together 15 minutes unless you knew what the picture looked like. If you knew what the picture looked like, yeah. But if you know what the picture of the world looks like, and you had to do it by matching the things, you could." "Impossible." He said, "Come and look." So he comes. And he sees on the glass top of a coffee table, the map is reconstructed perfectly. He says, "Wow, I didn't know. You're a genius. 5 years old, you must have known what the picture looked like. You must know what the world looks like." He said, "No." "So you see, on the other side of the page, there was a picture of a person. I just put the person together and the whole world fell into place." That's shmos. You put the person together and everybody redeems their potential, then ultimately the world falls into place and the world reaches perfection too. And that's how Mashiach's going to come. By everybody worrying about their name and bringing out their name, their abilities, capabilities, and talents, the world will ultimately reach perfection too. And Mashiach will be able to come way before the deadline. Nir Kashem Hayom Bekolo Tishma.